Got old uniforms? Reese by Nicole P. has the solution. Nicole, a veteran, handcrafts unique wreaths from military uniforms, a perfect tribute for your loved one's service. Commemorate special moments with personalized wreaths crafted by Nicole. No uniform, no problem. Wreaths by Nicole P. has every fatigue print ready for your custom creation. Explore wreath options at www.wreathsbynicolep.com or message Nicole directly on Facebook. Wreaths by Nicole P. Preserving memories one wreath at a time. Honor the past, celebrate the present.
So it sounds silly, but like I feel like I have a bit of PTSD from when I was at Quantico. There was this guy named Daniel Boyd that had plans to attack the base. So they put these posters up in our guard checks talking about, you know, these seven terrorists were planning to come attack the base, and the FBI thwarted it in time. So then I'm like standing out there, and every car that pulls up, I'm thinking, is this car going to just pull up and shoot me? And I did that for like 2 years straight, standing gate. And I'm wondering, you know, is there somebody up in the woods that's going to shoot me because they're planning on coming to attack the base? So it's like PTSD from a direct threat, but it's not like wartime PTSD. It's a little bit different.
Welcome to Your Story Doesn't End Here, the mental health podcast of military and veterans who refuse to be silenced. I'm your host, Rachel, and my mission with this podcast is to be a voice for those who don't have a voice, bring awareness to mental health issues, provide value and solutions, and to change the culture when it comes to mental health within the DoD organizations.
Hey, everyone, and thank you so much for coming back for another episode of Your Story Doesn't End Here. I'm your host, Rachel, and today my guest is Ross. Ross is a 37-year-old veteran, has two stepkids, two biological kids, three non-biological dogs, a cat, a bearded dragon, and an amazing second wife who has made his life better than it ever was before. He has been in public service since 06, served 6 years in the U.S. Marine Corps, and most recently left his job with NYS Homeland Security Office of Counterterrorism. Currently, he helps people navigate life insurance and investments and also gives veterans free benefit consultations. Ross, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad you actually went through that. It kind of reminded me where the heck I just came from.
Yeah. And it's always one of the most hardest questions for me to answer is when someone's like, tell me a little bit about yourself. And I'm not going to lie, I've been using ChatGPT a lot lately when I'm writing bios for me because it makes it sound prettier. Right. But yeah, it's like the greatest reflection of where you've been in your life and what you've done and what you're currently doing is when someone's like, write me a bio. So there you go.
What do you like doing? Eating.
Right. I'm like, I don't know. I'm not an interesting person. Right. But I think there's a lot there. I mean, you've done a lot of really cool things. And I think a lot of times when I talk to veterans, they're like, yeah, you know, my service wasn't really any different than anyone else's, or what I do, it isn't any different. I mean, probably some of the most humble people. Not everyone, some people, not so much, but I'm really excited to hear from you what your story was like. And so I'm just going to pass it off to you.
So back in 2006, I joined a fire department. It was a small county department. And I was trying to get onto a larger municipality, but I just couldn't find any jobs that would take me on. So I was like, screw this, I'm going to the Marine Corps. So I joined up, they took me, and I became a military policeman. So I went to my first duty station, which was Quantico, when I was there for 2.5 years, married my first wife at that time. And then we went to Okinawa together. Along that period, she had cervical cancer. So they removed it and they're like, well, if you're going to have a kid, you got to do it soon. So we like rushed into having a kid. So he was born in Japan. But while she was pregnant, I was supposed to go on deployment, but she turned out to be a high risk pregnancy. So they held me back. So I kind of missed my opportunity to deploy, which good or bad, I don't know, you know, not sure how people feel about it anymore. I think a lot of people came back and they wonder what they did that for. So it might've saved me in a way. So after that, anyways, we lived in Japan for a couple more years. We moved back stateside, lived in Montana, which is the most incredible place on earth. Problem is now, like, the prices there have been driven up so high, I don't think anybody can afford to live there anymore unless you're from California. I wish I could go. I hope to retire there one day, but anyways, so moved there. My wife at the time and I had like a breakdown in our relationship. So we ended up moving to New York, where her family's from, where she's originally from. And we got divorced. And then I met my current wife. And now we have her two kids. And then we just had a baby in September named Noelle. And after she was born, I decided, that's it. I'm not going into work anymore. And I changed careers completely and started doing life insurance and investments rather than going in doing the daily grind all the time. Working for New York State was fun at times because I got to act like a terrorist. That was my job, was to act like a terrorist and see if people called me, called the cops on me. So that was cool, but just away from home too much, and I'd rather be here. So that's kind of where I'm at now.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. So first of all, Montana is a beautiful state. I just wanted to comment on that. I've driven through there a few times. That's more the west side than the east side, I would think. But yes, gorgeous state. A little precarious in some places if you're driving through the mountains. But I'm from Iowa, so when we drive back to the Midwest, we always usually go through Montana. And so I definitely appreciate the beauty there. I want to talk about your time with pretending to be a terrorist.
Right.
You so, just kind of casually grazed over that. Like, yeah, no, that's not an everyday job. So talk to us a little bit more about that. I'm interested.
So it's part of the See Something, Say Something Act. But essentially, we're testing to see if people will actually say something when they see something. So we do red team exercises, and we go out to businesses and we buy bomb making material and things like that. Or we go to Buffalo Bills games or Times Square, and we do suspicious behavior to see if anybody will call in on us. And ideally, it's a white guy that looks like me, because that's the biggest threat at the moment. And then, you know, we don't want them thinking it's somebody from the Middle East anymore, because that's really, one, it's not the biggest threat, and two, that's profiling. We want them to look at our behavior more than the person themselves. So it's the behavior we want people to start recognizing. So to do that, we also do outreach. We go to these businesses ahead of time before we test them, and we try to teach them what to look for, you know, the materials and the behaviors. Same thing with the critical infrastructure. We'll go to places like parts of the electrical grid or the water plants, and see if they catch on to us snooping around and trying to do things. I keep saying us and we, but it's no longer me anymore. So they.
So how often did someone actually like catch on and call in to what you were doing?
There's about a 36% SAR rate, which is a suspicious activity report. So across the state for New York, about 36% of the time people would call in. About 70 some odd percent. Yeah, about 70% of the time they thought it was suspicious, but they didn't do anything.
Yeah, I was going to say that seems like a really low number, especially for New York. You know, I mean, obviously we know that's where like 9/11 took place, and I don't know, maybe people aren't as on high alert anymore, but it's interesting to hear that statistic. Because, you know, you hear about the studies and stuff that's been done where like, you know, someone will be getting like physically beaten in public and people will just like walk past it because they assume that someone else called. So I wonder if that's almost the same logic that people just thought someone else.
Bystander effect, it does come into play a little bit, but for the most part, that's only when there's like a group of people. When we're doing this, we're going to one person at a cash register, and you know, it's kind of on them to even notice.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll notice and they'll like tell their manager, and the manager's like, oh, it's fine. Don't even worry about it. That happens on occasion.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Which it's really sad, because I think anytime there's a tragedy that happens, we always go back and analyze like, oh, this was super preventable.
Oh yeah. All the time.
Yeah.
So going back and looking at things, it's fun to do. Like the September 11th attacks, the hotel, they took their own trash out. So that wasn't suspicious at the time because, but who takes their own trash out at a hotel, right? Like almost
right.
Nobody.
Right.
So that could have raised red flags. And that was where the FBI went to find their plans, was the trash too. So that's how we started making connections.
Wow. Yeah. It's always like the simplest things that it's like, man, just noticing the one thing. But no, that's a really cool job. And like I said, it's not like your standard job that you hear people do every day. So you definitely made quite the shift. But I wanted to talk a little bit about your time in the Marine Corps. And you talked a little bit about, you know, kind of the general overview of what you did and, you know, where you're stationed and whatnot. But how was the experience as far as like the people you're around in your unit and your leadership?
I found pretty quickly that, and this is going to sound really rude and arrogant, but I was a little too smart for Marine Corps. I also joined at the age of 22.
It doesn't sound arrogant.
Okay, good. I joined at 22, so like I was the same age as some of my NCOs when I came in. And it's like, dude, I've been in the real, you've been in since you were 18. I feel like I would have maybe a little leg up here on you. You know the Marine Corps, but I know life. Like, even at 22, though, I was pretty stupid.
Yeah.
But then even later on, as like when I got promoted to corporal, I had staff sergeants that were complete idiots. I'm like, this is not for me. This is not for me. I need somebody that knows how to lead and knows how to read. Like some of the basics. Should've
gone Air Force, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. It seems like a lot of the former Marines that I talk to, they're always like, you know, I was just kind of bored one day, so I decided to join the Marine Corps.
Well, you know, my deciding factor was I saw so many posts on Facebook, like places you've been. It was like some old ad back in 2007.
Yeah.
And they're like, Iraq. I'm like, dang, I kind of want to go there. Yeah. So the only way to go was to join. So that was like one of my motivating things to go.
Yeah. And you didn't even get to go.
Yeah. I'm a little pissed, but also relieved.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I think everything happens for a reason. So right. You said Okinawa is where you were at.
Yeah. Okinawa, so that was pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, they call it the Hawaii of Japan, but yeah. As soon as you walk out of the airport, you can smell pigs, and it's like,
Although I heard that the Marine base in Okinawa is like trash compared. I stayed on the Air Force base when I was there.
So Kadena is really nice, but there's like six Marine Corps bases. There's Schwab, Hanson, Camp Mercurius, Camp Courtney, Foster, Kadena, or not Kadena, Kenzer. And like another one, I can't even remember them all now, but Schwab's really cool because it's like the resort for the Marines almost, because it's got its own beach up there and then there's like no higher up, so you just go hang out.
Oh, nice. See, I didn't explore very much, but our supply guy would have to go to the Marine Corps base and he's like, that place is like tents and it's just crap. I'm like, oh, it's Marines, so no.
Well, Camp Hansen's like, That's junk.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe that was it. I don't know. Yeah.
That one's terrible. There's nothing good there.
So how was your transition out of the military?
It wasn't what I expected. So I got out and I started going to school in Montana for criminology. And I started applying for jobs thinking I was hot shit and I was going to get a really good job. That did not happen. One, because it was Montana. There's like no jobs, no good paying jobs there really.
Right.
And two, just nobody's looking for a military policeman or a physical security specialist. And, you know, you hear physical security specialist, you're like, is that a security guard? What is it? So that didn't pan out well for me. But I got my degree and got the heck out of there, although I loved it.
So you got your degree. And then did you find that getting into the workforce was fairly easy after that? Or...
So that's actually what pulled me out of Montana was I applied for a job in New York for director of safety and security for a nonprofit that provides services to adults with disabilities. So that was really cool. That's Achieve. If anybody's in New York and wants to go work for a place like that, Achieve is a great place to work. It's out of Binghamton, New York. They help so many people. It's really awesome. That was kind of my dream job, and I hate that I had to leave it. But so I had to leave there to move to Rochester because my ex-wife got fired from her job, needed to relocate for a new job. So to keep custody of my kid, I had to leave. So I'd still be there if it wasn't for that.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're in this new journey in New York. Is that where you're from as well? Or just where your ex-wife was from?
I'm from North Carolina. So
North Carolina. Okay. So a bit different.
Yeah. I've been all over the place though. So I left North Carolina at the age of 22, Marine Corps, South Carolina, Missouri, Virginia, Japan, and then Montana, now to New York. So all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. What were your thoughts about being in that different place? Or I guess at that point, you're kind of used to moving around. But what did you think about New York?
Well, so my dad's originally from New York, so it really wasn't that big of a deal. Like I used to come up to Jamestown, New York all the time. So I'm actually liking Rochester more than when I was in Binghamton. I like the weather. I like having snow and I like shoveling and stuff.
Yeah. Rochester's like upstate, right?
Yeah.
That's not like in the city. Okay. No, yeah. New York City is definitely a different world.
Yeah. I don't think I could handle the city.
Yeah. No, I can spend, I would say max 2 days in New York City and then I'm just done. I'm like, it's just too much hustle and bustle. I like cities, but I don't know. The people in New York are a different breed. So
my favorite like big city I've been to is St. Louis. I don't know if you've ever been, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm from Iowa originally. So St. Louis was like the, I don't know if I would call it the spot, but like, you know, a lot of Iowans don't like to travel outside of like the immediate radius of Iowa. So St. Louis just so happens to fall in that area. And so that was like the spot, the arch was like super cool and stuff. So yeah, St. Louis, I've been there. It's been a while, but yeah. So you obviously made this massive shift from what you were doing in these kind of what seemed like a bit higher tempo careers into life insurance, which I guess in my mind, I feel like life insurance isn't a super high tempo career. It may be, I don't know. So what, obviously life circumstances with your new baby and everything you said were a huge contributing factor, but why did you choose life insurance specifically?
So I'd actually posted in a military first responders group that I'm a dad group that I'm a part of. And somebody was like, hey, would you be interested? And I was kind of like, yeah, that sounds really good, actually. So I had a few friends commit suicide and a few friends die. And then my dad, when he died, he was homeless. So like life insurance made like a really, it hit home for me, being able to leave something behind for kids and like protect families, essentially. And I actually had a training call this morning and we talked about bringing value to people's lives. And I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to help people like fund their futures and protect their families. And that it works out really well for me because
I love that.
Follows what I want and I get to stay home with my kids and protect them too. So it works out really well.
I love that. And so you talked about suicides and I think this is kind of a topic that came up when I was serving active duty. It came up slightly, but it's obviously a bit of a touchy subject because we're talking about suicide and a lot of people don't want to talk about that. I heard on one end of the stick that if someone that was in the military took their life via suicide, that the serve or the SGLI does not actually pay out for that. Can you talk to us a little bit more, just kind of like an educational moment here, if you have that information, so people know kind of what to expect on that realm, specific to suicide?
I haven't looked at the SGLI exclusions. That doesn't surprise me that it would include that. It's a group policy. Group policies generally have more exclusions. It is one of the better insurances you can get as far as premium versus death benefit. So like really won't find a death benefit that high with that low of a premium anywhere else. But I haven't looked at their exclusions because that's not something I can offer. It's, you know, it's a government plan.
So on a normal, what you would offer is if someone were to take their life, that is.
So after holding the policy for 2 years, it would pay out.
Good to know. And I'm not asking for anyone listening. I'm not asking this as like, right. Hey, if you want to take your life, go get life insurance. But I think it's important, especially for families to know, because everyone's in a different state in their life. Right. And you just never know what's going to happen, whether it is suicide or a car accident or something. Like, we all know that life is not guaranteed every single day until we hit 100 years old. And so it is a very important thing to talk about, as uncomfortable as it can be. I think, you know, especially when we look at the older veteran generation that doesn't really want to talk about like, hey, life is coming to an end. And so what are some things that you find that people aren't as educated about when it comes to life insurance in the veteran community?
Pretty much everything. I don't think anybody really understands life insurance unless they're in the business. It's not something we talk about because people, it's an extra cost. It's a complete overhead for people. And they never reap their own benefits from it. So it's not something they think of. But it's like, if you pay car insurance every month, yeah, you might not wreck your car. So you never see the benefits from it. But if you did wreck your car, you'd be very glad you had it. I personally recommend everybody gets term insurance. I don't recommend whole life or universal life. Term insurance is a limited span, but it's only meant to cover you while you need it. And the goal being that once that term comes to an end, that you'll be essentially self-insured. You'll have enough assets built up that you no longer need life insurance because you'll have something to pass on to your family. So that's the goal. Whereas whole life, you pay that sucker the rest of your life and it's 3 or 4 times the cost of term insurance. So it's kind of a toss up. People look at whole life or universal life as an investment. Term life is protection in the meantime.
No, that's good to know. To me, it's still this word. Like, I'm so confused. I don't have life insurance, by the way. I probably should.
we should talk.
Yeah, we should talk. But yeah, no, I think when, especially when we're in a mental health podcast, obviously the topic of death comes up quite a bit. And that's just one of those things that, you know, there are things surrounding death that people need to know about that people don't know about. And so I appreciate people like you that come on here and can be a resource for veterans who need, like, hey, who do I talk to? Who's someone that is a veteran that I can trust? Because I think in the veteran community, especially, vets like to work with other vets. We just kind of have this understanding, whether we serve for 4 years, 20 years, there's just this different understanding within the veteran community. And so just having someone like you out there as a resource, I think, is huge in general. So what is the next step for you? What's the next, like, I'd say five year goal in your life in general?
I'll honestly probably still be doing this. I'm hoping to buy a nicer boat. That's about it, really.
Yeah.
So because we have four kids, we bought a boat last year, and it's okay, but I want a nicer one because it's hard to travel with that many kids. So yeah, we just keep the boat in the lake and do that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, fun. So you have several kids, and you're obviously dad. What if you had one of your children come up to you and say that they wanted to join the military in today's environment, what would you tell them?
Go Air Force or Space Force? Space Force.
Space Force. Why?
Or actually Coast Guard too. Coast Guard was something I wish I had converted into from the Marine Corps. I think I would have done really well with that. I want them to go into a branch that will have skill to translate out, and also one where they're treated like adults rather than children. Yeah. I was going to say a different word, but children.
Yeah. We'll keep it PG.
Yeah, there we go.
And so what are your overall feelings about your service?
I enjoyed it. It just wasn't what I expected. And I think most people that go in the Marine Corps come out feeling that way.
Interesting.
I think we thought we were the biggest and baddest, and in all reality, I don't really think that's the case. I think it's a numbers game. And so they're pushing through whoever they can push through. I was probably even one of them because I suck at pull-ups, but yeah, I think still they just pushed through. Yeah.
So were you one of those that technically shouldn't have passed boot camp?
No, so I passed legitimately.
You did? Okay.
I did, but still, I'm a bare minimum pull-up guy. Like, I'm 6 foot five, and I weighed 210 pounds at the time, so I was skinny then. Not anymore, but I'm not good at pull-ups. Like, I can just stand on the ground and hold the pull-up bar. Why do I need to pull up, you know?
Yeah,
I was never good at them, but I passed. I was a bare minimum pull-up guy.
Yeah,
I'd run a 19-minute 3-mile though, so I was fast at least.
Yeah, see, I said this I recorded a podcast episode yesterday with a Marine veteran, and I was like, I didn't join any branch but the Navy because the run was a mile and a half. I was not trying to do two. I think Army was 2, and Marine Corps was 3, and I was like, nope, I'm good. Not a runner, not doing it. Yeah,
that was the part I excelled at.
Yeah, no, not for me. I was a swimmer, and us water people, we don't do well on land usually. So, yeah. But no, that's super interesting. I think a lot of Marines that I talk to usually don't have that response of like, that wasn't really what I expected. Because a lot of Marines, I mean, you always have your outliers. You, to me, kind of seem like the outlier that wasn't like super into the hoorah, like, you know, all the Marine stuff.
To me, that's all false bravado. Not me.
Yeah, you're just like, yeah, I'm just here to do the job. And yeah. What else was I had a really good question I was going to ask you, and it's slipping my mind. Oh, did you ever experience any mental health challenges when you were serving or outside of service?
Yeah, so it sounds silly, but like, I feel like I have a bit of PTSD from when I was at Quantico. There was this guy named Daniel Boyd that had plans to attack the base. So they put these posters up in our guard checks talking about, you know, these 7 terrorists were planning to come attack the base, and the FBI thwarted it in time. So then I'm like standing out there, and every car that pulls up, I'm thinking, is this car going to just pull up and shoot me? And I did that for like 2 years straight, standing gate. And I'm wondering, you know, is there somebody up in the woods that's going to shoot me because they're planning on coming to attack the base? So it's not like, it's like PTSD from a direct threat, but it's not like wartime PTSD. It's a little bit different, right?
Yeah, which I mean, I think to me, I believe is still completely valid. And I think that's the struggle that a lot of veterans deal with is like, is my PTSD, quote unquote, as bad as this guy's PTSD? But I think it's important to know for not only you, but anyone listening, that PTSD is PTSD. And our version of trauma is based on our experience, because it is completely an experiential thing. someone and I see talk to a lot of guys that go through some really like crazy ruthless combat situations, and I'm like, well, what are your feelings surrounding that? And they're like, oh, I'm good. Like they watched some horrible things. But then I talked to other people who went through an experience that some people might look at and be like, oh, that wasn't that big of a deal, but they're very much traumatized by it. So it's definitely a valid thing to say you have PTSD over or to even be traumatized by. And yeah, I mean, that's terrifying, especially when it's that like anticipatory, like you don't know what's going to happen. And it's like every day you're showing up thinking like, I don't know, is this going to be my last day on earth? And so that's definitely very valid.
Also being an MP, we had to respond to a lot of things too. So like suicides and car wrecks and things like that. So yeah, Seeing that stuff also. But I feel like the constant threat of anticipated violence is probably what affects me the most. Like I was sitting on the couch the other night and I don't have the curtains drawn on the window. And I feel like I'm waiting for somebody outside that window to shoot me. Like, here it is 13, 14 years later. And I'm still like somebody just sitting out there looking to shoot me.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but
yeah,
it still kind of affects me.
Yeah. And again, very valid. And I would encourage you, if you haven't gotten help for that, I would encourage you to explore those options, because yeah, that's a very valid thing to experience PTSD over. And then also being an MP, I know several MAs in the Navy that have told me some stories about the things that they have to deal with. And one of the thoughts that came to mind for me was like, man, when you walk in the recruiter's office and you pick this job, most recruiters aren't saying like, hey, if you're going to be police, you're going to deal with this, 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 and this. Are you up for it? They're just like, hey, man, sign the line. You're going to love it. If you don't love it, just pick a new career 2 years later. This is what they told me, at least. Not true, by the way. But yeah, the things that the military police of all branches have to deal with, to me, like that can really mess someone up, especially like responding to suicides. And so can you talk to us just a little bit about like the things that you have to respond to as an MP, just for the people that are listening that maybe aren't super familiar with that job field?
So there was one incident where this Lance Corporal had laid his head on the railroad tracks and let the train run over him. So like had to respond to that to clean it up and start an investigation and figure out what happened. There was another one, and it was actually one of our lieutenants who hung himself on base that we had to respond to. And like it was premeditated. He went out there and like he had his military uniforms in one tub and his civilian clothing in another tub, and he left notes with both and like, here you go, here you can check me out, essentially, and just hung himself right on base at the lake. That sucked because he was a really awesome dude, just the nicest guy. So he was brand new into his career. It was sad to see him go. Trying to think a couple others. Car wrecks are always bad. I remember seeing a vehicle flipped over into a river, caught on fire. One of the driver was ejected, and then the passenger was stuck in the car, and like parts of his skin were missing. Like it's gruesome and stuff you could probably see in country too, but you know, it happens at home every day. Also, just first responders in general have to respond to those things.
Yeah. And so when you're responding to these things, is there regular like therapy provided to MPs specifically because you're in that job field?
No, that was never an option when I was
in. Yeah. And then remind me, is MP one of those fields where people are typically afraid to go seek help because you could lose like your gun qual or something? Or is that not the attitude in the Marine Corps? Because I know Navy, I knew a few people who were afraid to go seek help because they're like, oh, if I'm on medication or antidepressants, they'll take away my guns. And
for us, I think it was more just how we were perceived by our peers. That was probably the biggest part of it. There was one kid I remember who just like soaked it up. And he was, in fact, I got in trouble one time for drinking, something stupid. And he's like, oh, just tell him you're suicidal and then you don't have to work anymore. I'm like, no, dude, I'm not doing that. But some people like him abused these programs. And then I think the rest of us just avoided them.
Yeah. I think that's kind of a lot of the general consensus with mental health is the stigma in the military still exists so much that there are people that have used the systems. I've met a few of them myself, but then there are people that just, you know, they don't want to even deal with the stigma. And hopefully we can get to a better place with, I mean, it's not just a military thing. It's a global thing. It's a nationwide thing. And there's a lot of work to be done, but I appreciate you sharing those perspectives. I think a lot of times when we're in these job fields, to us, it kind of becomes like the normal, like day to day, like, oh, yep, just had to clean up another body today, you know? And like, we forget that there are civilians out there that have absolutely no idea. Like, to them, they think military police is just like riding around in a squad car and, you know, pulling people over once in a while and
standing gate, saluting.
Yeah, right. Which, yeah, no, thank you. I would not, no, do not want to do that. That was like a collateral duty at my duty station, was at the gate. And everyone always told me, you should do it. I'm like, hey, you know, I don't want the OC spray in my eyes. So I'm not even going to get that qual.
Right.
So everyone says it's not that bad. But
I struggled the most when I actually got out of the Marine Corps and I lost my purpose. And also my wife at the time was not like supportive at all. But losing my purpose, I felt like was the biggest kicker to me. Like I was thinking about driving off a freaking bridge kind of deal. So
yeah. And that's such a common theme with veterans. And I'm glad you brought that up because you are an example of someone who served and didn't go on like a combat deployment. And I think a lot of people think that the only people who struggle when they get out of the military are the people who like went on these major combat deployments. Cause I work a lot with veterans and transition and reintegration. And oftentimes when I say the words transition and reintegration, people are like, oh, well, when I came back from Iraq, well, we had this little bit of a reintegration. And I'm like, no. Like there are veterans who have separated from service that never deployed a day in their life and still really struggle because it is such a different lifestyle for so many years of your life, 4 years, 2 years, 6 years, however long you may have served. And it makes it really hard to go from like one day, you know exactly what you need to do, what you need to wear, where you need to be. And then the next day, it's like this overwhelming amount of freedom that feels really good at first. And then you're like, oh, well, now what? Because all your friends and people you served with are still like doing that thing, right? But it's like, well, now I'm this kind of outsider. That's how I felt, at least, when I separated from the military. And
I was so freaking weird when I first got out.
Yeah.
I was going to school and there's this, one of my professors was an Air Force veteran and he tried to come talk to me and I had no idea how to talk to him anymore because he was like a normal civilian and I was this weird robot from the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
And I'm still embarrassed by that, how I acted back then. I was like, oh my God, that was cringy.
Yes, sir, ma'am, I don't know. Yeah, it's especially, I mean, were there a lot of vets in your school or were you like the anomaly?
Yeah, not really. I mean, it was University of Montana, so it's not a small school, but it's not huge either. And I feel like the population there mostly was young kids from close to the area.
Yep.
So yeah,
that's always weird.
The Billy Madison thing, you know.
Yeah, that was when I went to nursing school and I was like, for the first few classes that I took, it was just a bunch of like 18-year-olds, which is weird because I was in a military town. So I figured there'd be more military. It was just like a bunch of younger kids that weren't vets. And they're like, oh, wow, you're in the military? Yeah. Yeah, such a different world. But no, Ross, I really appreciate you coming on and just sharing bits and pieces of your life. We kind of jumped around all over the place, but great conversation. And I appreciate the value that you provided. Can you just take a minute to let the people that are listening know where they can find you and how they can support you and maybe reach out if they want to talk to you more about working with you?
Sure. Well, first I want to add one last thing about life insurance. If you're doing your veterans claims or you've already done them, try and get your life insurance now or get it before you put in your claims because you don't want to get to the point where you're uninsurable, whether it's due to being denied or to being cost prohibitive. Because like if you get all these disabilities packed up, the premium cost goes up and up and up and you probably can't afford it anymore. So get it while you're young and healthy-ish before it's too late because you're going to want it later and you're not going to be able to get it. That kind of sucks. So yeah, you can reach me. My email is rossrinaldo@protonmail.com. mentalhealthpodcast.com. My phone number is 607-377-4125. And I've got a bunch of other contact info stuff, but that's the easiest way to get a hold of me directly.
Awesome. And I will make sure to put that in the show notes, so anyone that wants to reach out can reach out, and I hope they do. Do you have any like social media or anything anyone can support you on?
Really just Facebook. It's not even like a follower thing. It's just my profile.
Yeah, fair enough. You're simple.
Yeah.
That's good. There's too many social media profiles out there, account or platforms out there these days, and they get incredibly overwhelming. So I like that you're a simple guy. Any last words or pieces of advice that you want to leave the listeners with today, Ross?
No, I think I covered everything.
Awesome.
Thank you very much for having
me. Of course.
Me.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being on the show, and looking forward to following your journey and seeing how you grow over the next few years.
Likewise. Thank you. I'm going to make sure to follow you as well.
Awesome.
Thank you for taking the time to listen in today. With your support, we are able to increase awareness of the mental health issues affecting service members and veterans today, with the goal of creating positive change. If you got value from this episode, please take 30 seconds to subscribe and share this episode within your own network. Until next time, remember, your story matters, your mental health matters, and your story doesn't end here.